morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. The next case on our calendar today is A23-1284, Energy Transfer LLP versus Unicorn Riot et al. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent, I know you are a cross-appellant, but under our rules, you do not get an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal without a motion, and I did not see a motion, so just wanted to clarify that from the outset.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And if you could please introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument, we would greatly appreciate it for purposes of the recording here today. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Richard Snyder. I'm representing the appellants in this matter. The violent events in the summer of 2016 at the construction site of the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota are certainly newsworthy. Organized militant groups coordinated direct attacks on the pipeline, breaching security, physically threatening and assaulting workers, destroying equipment, and causing millions of dollars in damages. A federal judge described it as criminal mayhem. The mayhem was covered by many news outlets who managed to do their reporting using traditional, legitimate news gathering techniques. They did not have to trespass or participate in the mayhem in order to cover it. Unicorn Riot, on the other hand, did just that. It uses the euphemism embedded, that it was embedded with these organizations, but what it really means is it participated in their efforts. It rode shotgun with these groups as they crossed the security lines and entered onto the property, threatening workers and disrupting the construction.
Are you saying Union Riot?
Unicorn Riot, yes, was on site. It trespassed and was on site.
Are you saying they were active participants in the destruction of property?
No.
Okay.
No, they were trespassing on the site.
So the allegation is just that they were trespassing, and that's...
Yeah, right. And that's not seriously disputed at all.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
Yep. Their members were arrested. Now, Unicorn Riot insists it's entitled to the same privilege under the Act that all the other journalists covering this story enjoy, but it's not in the same boat as these other journalists who use legitimate news gathering techniques. They did not trespass.
But they aren't disputing that they might, they're not making a claim of that they're immune from civil liability, are they?
No, I don't think so. They may be.
I didn't read it that way, but I'm just trying to get to the...
Yeah, right. We don't know. They weren't joined in the North Dakota lawsuit against Greenpeace. They're not a party to that. And if they had been, I imagine they would be making the same argument that they're making here, that the First Amendment protects their activities. It gives them a privilege. But I think the key is there's no such thing as a privilege to trespass. Our central point is that journalists can do their work without committing torts. And their work
isn't
enjoys...
Isn't really the question before us, though, whether the statute has a limitation of the type that you are asking us to read into the statute?
Yeah.
And what language in the statute do you think supports your reading of a limitation into the statute?
Yeah, that goes to, I think, the heart of what the district court in this case did. The district court concluded that, you know, this trespass was inconsequential because to the application of the statute. And the key language out of the district court's order is one sentence. It says, plaintiff's additional argument that tortious or illegal conduct completely precludes invocation of the Minnesota Free Flow of Information Act appears to have no basis in either statute or case law, and no citation is made to it. So I think that's the court's question. What in the statute says this?
And so what language do you point to in the statute to support your argument that this you know, privilege does not apply if the conduct at issue is, amounts to a tort or is unlawful in some way, which I think that's what you're asking us to read into the statute.
I'm not asking you to read anything into the statute. The statute doesn't say that, and nor does it need to say that.
Well, why not?
The structure...
Yeah, why not? Because our job, I mean, what we're doing is interpreting a statute. So we look at the language of the statute to perpetuate the intent. So what in the language of the statute suggests that we should add the word law? Well, first of all, let me clarify. So in reading your briefs, your argument here is that the exceptions in 595.024, that's not what you're arguing, correct? You're not saying, and we have satisfied the requirements for this exception, or the exception set out in 0.024, and so therefore we're entitled to this unpublished material from Unicorn Riot.
Well, I want to kind of answer all the questions that are before me right now.
Let's focus on that one first, because I think that's a fundamental question for which part of the statute we should be looking at. So your argument is just that 595 is a, you know, the main section, and I don't have my printed out copy
0.023.
Of it here. Thank you, 0.023. That's what you're relying on. You're not saying you fall within 0.024. That's what you said in your brief. I just want to confirm that is your position?
Yeah, it's a little more nuanced than your honor. It's a two-step analysis. Okay. And the first step is, does the statute attach? Does this privilege attach in the first instance? And if it attaches then you start looking at, well, okay, there's a privilege that applies. Are there exceptions to the privilege that will be applicable? Those are still in play in the district court. The district court said, when we get the privilege log and we figure out, you know, what it is that is being withheld, so we have a sense of that, we can look at this. The court said, once the plaintiff knows the existence of the documents and information that's being withheld, plaintiff may foreseeably be able to make a case that would bring some claims of privilege.
I don't think you're answering our question, though. So what is your statutory argument? First of all, is your argument, and your brief is kind of, at least your reply brief is very clear. In your reply brief, appellant argues that, no, we're not relying on 595.024. We're just saying the correct interpretation of 0.023 is that the only protected conduct by that privilege, the news gathering organization has to be acting lawfully when they gather the news. Is that your client's position?
Yes.
That's what you put in your brief. I just want to make sure that's your position.
Yeah, so the privilege does not attach to sort of conduct. There's no privilege at all that even you have to turn to the statute for.
You're not relying on 595.024 as the basis for your argument. You're saying the privilege doesn't attach at all.
Correct.
Okay, all right, thank you. Sorry for sounding argumentative.
And then if it attaches, then you look at the exceptions, which will happen in the district court once
so
it's
you
remanded.
So you argue there's no privilege under 595.023.
Not for this conduct, correct.
Right. And I'm trying to understand. What language in 595.023 provides that the court is to consider whether the activity engaged in by the news organization was tortious or unlawful?
It's not there, Your Honor.
Okay. So you're asking us to add language to the statute?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. I'm asking for a determination. Your Honor, maybe the best way to explain this is this is really akin to the attorney-client privilege. That appears in the statute right above this. At 595.02, and there's an attorney-client privilege, and it doesn't contain an exception for crime fraud. So if an attorney and a client conspire to commit a crime, or there's communications to that effect, those do not come within the privilege at all. So you don't have to look at an exception to the privilege in order to get that. The privilege just doesn't attach at all.
Isn't that in the rules of professional responsibility, however, that defines what an attorney's duty is? I mean, it's not just out of thin air. It's not just adding it to a statute. And it, okay, I'm sorry. Isn't that a valid distinction here? Here, we're looking at a statute, and you're asking us to assume something that isn't there. So why isn't the attorney-client privilege different? Because I think, you know, the rules of professional responsibility say that if you're engaged in you know, committing a crime with your client, that that's not privileged.
No, I don't think they say that. I think you're yeah. subject to discipline, and you're subject to disbarment. So, I mean, that's a different thing. It's a court-made rule that says that privilege is not going to attach, and that's what we're saying here. This is just should be a court-made rule that under these circumstances, when a reporter is engaging in tort conduct, in gathering news, that's not going to be protected under a privilege.
So why then did the legislature add the exception in 0.024 if their 0.023 should be limited to legal, lawful, legitimate news gathering?
0.024 is dealing with, it's a different topic. It's dealing with someone else's
But wouldn't
conduct.
It be surplusage it's, then?
Pardon
me? I mean, it would be surplusage.
No.
But you were arguing that these people were engaged in unlawful conduct.
Correct.
Trespassing. So how is it different conduct?
That's dealing with the situation involving, like the Turner case, involving a criminal prosecution in which the reporter has information that's relevant to it, and the defendant wants to get it, and there's a balancing that has to go on about the application of the privilege and then the defendant's rights to defend himself or herself at trial. And so that is the balancing test that courts under the First Amendment privilege have applied. So that's a codification of that. But
so
again, that only...
So where in 0.024 does it say it's relating to other people's conduct and not the news person's conduct?
I think that's the whole purpose of it.
You to point me to the language in the statute that you think supports the purpose of 0.024. I mean, you're making broad arguments about purpose here, but we are, as you know, our role is to interpret the plain language of the statute.
Yeah.
That's why
right.
we're asking you these questions
about
the statutes themselves.
If the statute applies, I think that's right.
Right,
and
but,
so
that's, but whether the statute applies depends on the language of the statute.
Yeah.
Unless there's precedent from the Supreme Court telling us otherwise.
The whole purpose of the statute is identified in 022. It's to protect this privilege, you know, consistent with the public interest. The public interest is not for reporters to break the law, to trespass in gathering the news. That's the hook I think you can look to for our argument.
Let's take a hypothetical where a reporter goes on to somebody else's property, interviews somebody, they don't know that they're trespassing, but they are trespassing. Does that mean that they have no privilege?
Well, I think that's all, it's gonna be a fact determination. I don't know. You know, if I can really opine on that based on what we know. But what we know in this case is that there was trespass. Maybe there was consent in your case. I don't know.
Well, but what difference does that make?
I think that the reporters here knew that they were not allowed on this property. They intentionally crossed onto it anyway. You may be talking about a situation where someone doesn't know whether they're allowed or not. These people knew that they were not allowed on this property. There was security to keep people out.
Okay. Judge Cochran, can I ask
Go ahead.
A question
yeah.
about different?
Sure.
So if we determine that the district court got it right, that the privilege attaches, what is left in your in the subpoena, in appellant's subpoena, that would not be privileged? And I'll note, you know, in the letter that counsel for Unicorn Riot sent, I mean, they provided such things as their social media sites. They directed energy transfer to their website where all their published news gathering information is located. They said, we weren't, I don't have it all here. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through it all. They also said they didn't have responsive documents to several of the requests. So what's left that's actually would come within the scope of Rule 26, considering that Unicorn Riot is not sued in this litigation, they're a third party.
Right.
Assuming the privilege attaches, and that so just use that as a basis.
We'll know more when they do the privilege log that they're required to do, and what they have.
No, but that's just whether something's privileged or not. What are you hoping to get that would not be part of their news gathering information?
There's quite a number of things. I mean,
such as
we asked about their structure, their organization, what is their connection with some of these other entities and organizations that were conducting the direct action attacks. We're asking for communications with them about planning of these attacks, that sort of stuff.
They said they didn't plan any direct action. They weren't involved in any direct action.
Well, then their privilege log will be very short. But we don't know this. They provided zero documents in connection with this.
So is there structure? How is that relevant to your cause of action against the defendants?
It may be the relationship with these other entities, how they're getting their funding.
That then maybe I'll sue them. I mean, I don't want to sound argumentative, but I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, right. These are all good questions, Your Honor, but these are questions that the district court is going to have to address, because these were all raised as in objections. They said these aren't relevant. We don't have this stuff. We don't have that stuff. They gave us nothing. The district court says, fine, why don't you put together your privilege log, and we'll go through it then with the idea that there will be further proceedings on the basis of their privilege, if there's no basis for the privilege. But these are all questions that the district court is going to have to grapple with when it gets remanded after this privilege log is presented.
So can I go ahead? Do I have permission to ask one more question?
You may.
So in Unicorn Riot's reply brief, they set out two different sample privilege logs. One was what you might see for a claim of attorney-client privilege. So date, who you talk to, it's established that that's not privileged. Here, the source is. So what would a privilege log even look like? I mean, and I will note that Rule 45 never mentions the word privilege log. I mean, it talks about something sufficient to determine the basis, blah, blah, blah. So if the privilege attaches, what would a privilege log even look like?
I think that's something
in itself disclose privileged information.
Yeah. They can take steps to privilege logs are generated all the time. And in the attorney-client situation, people don't reveal what the attorney-client communication was or even what the work product was if they're listing it on a privilege log. And that they could take steps to protect that. And we can deal with that when we get back.
They're saying, look, we could do this, but it would look like what we put in our reply brief.
They're required to do it. We'll take a look at it when we get it. I mean, I can't stand up here and say what's going to be sufficient or not until I see what they put together.
Okay.
But they can take steps that they feel are appropriate.
Fair enough.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank
you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The Free Flow of Information Act protects...
Introduce yourself as part of your...
Forgive me, Your Honor.
Please, thank you.
Christopher Proschko, representing respondents Unicorn Riot and Nico Georgiadis.
Thank you.
The Free Flow of Information Act protects Unicorn Riot from compelled production of its news-gathering materials. Energy Transfer's novel argument lacks any support in the language of the statute, the record before this court, or the case law exploring the reporter's privilege. Furthermore, the district court's privilege log procedure requires respondents to produce exactly what the act prohibits, production of news-gathering materials and information without first establishing a statutory exception.
But why wouldn't the district court have the right to look through stuff and see what actually comes within the privilege or not? I mean, what? Why not? Is there an issue? And you have taken issue with it because you appealed that part of the ruling.
Quite simply, Your Honor, it's the language of the statute. You know, the statute itself provides that no person shall be ordered to produce, shall be required by any court to produce or disclose any news-gathering information or source-identifying information. The way the statute is structured, it removes the disclosure obligation from entities covered by the statute. And without that disclosure obligation, in order to be required to disclose anything, an exception must apply.
Well, aren't some of the document requests, don't they go beyond what the exception covers?
No, Your Honor. Again...
I think in the briefing, appellants identify some specific information that they think goes beyond what's covered, including the list of employees, financing, other things like that. So, you know, it isn't it appropriate then to kind of parse through what is and isn't covered by the privilege?
Parsing through what is and isn't covered by the privilege occurs when an exception to the act applies. There's a statutory bar to production. And if an exception applies, then you go through the traditional reporter's privilege analysis under 595.024.
Right, but I don't think the district court found that all the documents were covered by the privilege. The district court said many of which are almost certain to be covered by the privilege.
What the district court found, Your Honor, I agree, is that the privilege applies to my clients. And if the privilege applies, then absent an exception, the statute does not allow the court to order production.
No, but, well, maybe I'm reading the district court's order differently than you are, but it seemed to me that the district court was saying some of the documents might not even fall within the scope of the privilege.
That is what the district court said, Your Honor,
and
yes.
Not that they would fall within an exception for, you know, the criminal exception or the defamation exception, but they just aren't information about the news gathering.
That is what the...
So you're suggesting that you can just assert this privilege to things that don't even fall within the scope of it, not that come within an exception, but just are outside of the scope of the privilege?
I think that the Free Flow of Information Act allows covered entities, and in fact bars them from being ordered, to produce materials in response to a third-party subpoena. And under the...
It's only that to disclose the person or means from or through which information was obtained or disclose unpublished information procured by the person in the course of the work. So it doesn't appear to cover a list of employees.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor. I do think that the makeup of a news-gathering organization, particularly one that embeds itself within the subjects that it covers, you know, that can indeed lead to production of news gathering information or identification
specific
of sources.
Specific wording, I'm going to ask, we're going to pepper you with the same question we peppered appellant's counsel with. Where in the statute does it say that? Because I don't see it.
I would say reportorial data, Your Honor.
You would say what?
Reportorial data.
And where is that in here?
Sure.
I see...
Any of the person's notes, memoranda, recording tapes, film, or other reportorial data?
So nothing. So a news organization has no duty at all in a third-party basis to produce anything.
That's not...
The question was, aren't there some things that you may would not be covered by the privilege?
There are instances where media organizations are required to produce things in litigation. In third-party subpoenas in civil cases, unless it's a defamation case, as provided under .025, the privilege is nearly absolute under Minnesota law. There might be an occasion, I suppose, under .024, where the requesting party can demonstrate its relevance to a felony or gross misdemeanor or a misdemeanor as set out in subdivision 2.
What about there's been some, like, food poisoning or something, and some of the employees at the newspaper have been poisoned. And so there's a third-party request or somebody, that's not related to news gathering. I think you're taking an... Well, anyway, it doesn't matter in the context of this case so much, I guess. So appellant is arguing that we should add a presumption to this statute that the news gathering activities have to be sort of within the bounds of the law. Are there no limits to that?
Well,
I mean, to what would be privileged? Let's say, for example, that one of the reporters, or several, maybe it takes several of them, from the Star Tribune, kidnap a person because they won't talk to them voluntarily, and they hold them captive in their car and grill them. So is that okay? Is that then privileged, what they get from the person in a kid? I mean, are there no limits to that?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that the hypothetical you're describing would very likely fall under the exception in .024, subdivision 2, relevant to a crime, necessary, material, and otherwise unavailable, right? But, the law provides dual tracks for this. There is generally applicable tort and criminal law, and then there's protections of the reporter's privilege. And appellants are attempting to say that our assertion of the reporter's privilege is akin to asserting immunity to generally applicable laws. And that's simply not the case. They rely extensively on Food Lion, a case out of the Fourth Circuit, Third Circuit, I forget. But they rely extensively on Food Lion. But in Food Lion, the reporters were attempting to use the First Amendment as a bar to civil immunity for tortious actions. We're not attempting to assert an immunity to tortious actions. My clients haven't been sued. Any criminal charges against them have been dropped.
Appellants argue that their reading of the statute to limit the privilege to lawful conduct, news gathering that was part of, that wasn't related to unlawful conduct, that is consistent with the overriding policy of the statute and public policy generally, referring to the attorney-client privilege analogy. So why not read in that sort of overriding limitation for those reasons?
Well, first, the court can't read in words to a statute that aren't there. The reason why not to, though, is that the purpose of the reporter's privilege is to allow for the robust flow of information. Even going as far back as Brandsburg, the first Supreme Court case to address the reporter's privilege, the reporter at issue had information regarding drug use and drug distribution. The court determined that in a criminal case, in response to a criminal grand jury subpoena, he had to testify. He couldn't refuse to comply with the subpoena, right? But the excuse me, Your Honor. The law provides for robust protection on purpose. even covering entities that might be committing illegal acts is necessary for an informed public. The media that covers them and itself commits illegal acts is still liable and potentially prosecutable for wrongs that it commits. But that is a separate legal track from the reporter's privilege.
You're arguing that this privilege doesn't provide any immunity from prosecution or civil liability for unlawful conduct by
That's black letter law, Your Honor.
Organization.
That's right.
Do you dispute that the district court has the authority to require a privilege log in this case?
I think that the district court abused its discretion because requiring a privilege log here violates the requirements of the statute that say my client shall not be ordered to produce absent an exception.
Okay. So they have the authority, but you think it's an abuse of discretion?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And discretion is pretty broad, so explain to me what the limit is on the court's discretion in producing and requiring a log to be produced.
Certainly, I mean, the court's discretion is broad, but that discretion does not extend to ordering something that violates a statute passed by the legislature.
So you're kind of saying you don't have the authority.
I'm saying that they have, well, yes, Your Honor. I suppose that's right. In this case, where there's a bar on ordered production, unless an exception applies, the legislature has said my client shall not be ordered to produce something.
Okay. I wanted some clarification on it, because it sounded like you were saying that there is no discretion in this case. It's basically black letter, as you say.
I think that's right.
But couldn't you craft a log that does not disclose privileged information, as futile an effort as you might think that would be?
I don't think that we could, Your Honor. The date that my clients communicated with individuals, the identity of the individuals, obviously,
right.
Source information.
If the privilege applies, yep.
The method of communication could be used to identify with whom they were speaking. The contents of the communication, obviously privileged, obviously.
Would the fact that there was an oral conversation versus a telephone conversation, is that privileged if you don't disclose who that is with?
Under the statute,
I mean,
Your Honor.
As unhelpful as that might be.
Under the statute, Your Honor, you know, it's the means of news gathering.
And on what do you rely that the court can't ask for in-camera review to determine which materials that might be responsive are in fact privileged if the court decided to go down that path? I mean, there's a broad right of kind of that sort of the default is, well, let the court look at it and decide what's privileged and what isn't.
Sure. And looking at the cases, though, Your Honor, all of those cases were criminal cases that had in-camera review.
So why should that matter? Why does that matter? Because this statute applies to criminal cases as well as civil cases.
Yes, Your Honor. There's an exception for the criminal cases, however, under .024. And each of those courts had made a finding that the exception applied. If you look at Knutson, you know, this court addressed...
I think the court that something in .023 prohibits the court from even determining whether they think something falls within the privilege. I mean, the court can't look at any of your materials. And is there anything besides, is there any case law you're relying on for that premise, aside from the language of the statute itself?
No, we're relying on the language of the statute, Your Honor. You know, look, if you look at Knutson, this court addressed the necessary showing to compel production, of course, for an in-camera review, which is what the court below has instituted a procedure and is seeking to do. But there, the state subpoenaed the Minnesota Daily for unpublished photographs relating to two counts of felony assault. The district court ordered those photographs would be produced for in-camera review, and this court affirmed, noting that the prongs of the exception to the Free Flow of Information Act had been satisfied.
Is this Tyler or that you're...
This is State versus Knutson.
Knutson, okay, all right. Sorry. State versus Turner, but you're on Knutson, okay.
And it's also important to note the interest that the court was weighing at that time. Mm-hmm. It was the First Amendment rights and privileges in news gathering against the defendant's self-defense argument and right to a fair trial. Mm-hmm. Criminal cases operate differently and have different weighty interests than run-of-the-mill civil cases. I see my time is up.
Can you conclude briefly?
Of course, Your Honor. Thank you.
Are there any further questions from the panel? No.
Ultimately, Your Honors, the issue before this court is one of simple statutory interpretation. The court below reviewed the record and correctly determined that the Free Flow of Information Act protects my clients from being compelled to produce news-gathering documents in response to a third-party subpoena. Energy Transfer's argument lacks support in the facts, the law, the record, and the policy supporting the reporter's privilege. We ask this court affirm the district court's determination that the act protects my clients, vacate its order requiring production of a privilege log, and remand for the district court to address our request for attorney's fees. Thank you.
Five minutes for rebuttal.
Yeah, I wanted to start with the case citation. You mentioned the Food Lion case, and saying that's not applicable because it's a claim against the news organization.
But it's also under constitutional law, and we have a statute here that is broader, especially the way you argue the First Amendment, which much broader than First Amendment protections.
Yeah, right. So Minnesota has a statute, and other jurisdictions that don't have a similar statute have adopted the First Amendment privilege. It's very similar, really. And I wanted to highlight.
I thought you were arguing that there is no such First Amendment privilege recognized.
It hasn't been recognized in Minnesota, and I think at some point it might be, but. It hasn't yet.
So you're saying Food Lion is Fourth Circuit, which would be applying federal law, correct?
Yeah. So some of these cases, are applying the First Amendment privilege from other jurisdictions. And the one I wanted to highlight is in our briefs. It's United States versus Sanusi, and I think it's very analogous to this situation. Mm-hmm. It's the police had got a warrant to search someone's apartment, and the CBS film crew accompanied them on their search, on their execution of the search warrant. They embedded, essentially, and went in and did the same thing here that Unicorn Riot did. So it filmed the entire contents of the apartment, it filmed the search and all of that. Afterwards, the defendant served a subpoena on the news agency saying, we want to have your tape that you took in my apartment. And the news agency raised the same sort of argument. Oh, it's protected, it's First Amendment. And the court said, no, you trespassed on this property and you have waived your privilege that otherwise would have attached to your news reporting. That's exactly the situation we're having in this case. It is exactly the situation that we are advocating for. The privilege should not be attaching in this instance at all.
So what case law would say that we should apply an interpretation of the First Amendment to a state statutory privilege? Do you have any case law saying that that's inappropriate? Because they are different. I mean, it's different. If we were just in First Amendment land, our analysis would be quite different than, if we didn't also have this statute.
Yeah, I think the statute is based on First Amendment principles for sure. I think that's what was driving the legislature to enact this, and if it hadn't, the courts would be, addressing whether it exists or not. So I think the case law interpreting the First Amendment is wholly applicable to this. Privilege attaches in the first instance. I think those are correctly on point.
So it's like the inherent authority of the court. Like we're supposed to add on a common law gloss to this. But what case law can you point to say we have that authority as the judicial branch.
I think you can So I think I mentioned the attorney-client privilege and the statutory privilege and the exceptions that courts have applied to that. And so this is really the same sort of instance in my view that the court would be doing the same thing. And I think you can draw upon the...
Do you have a specific case, though, that you would point us to that supports your view that we should read the statute in this manner?
No, I think it's a foundational principle that is going to be applying to any statute. You look at what was the legislature intending this statute, the scope of the statute to be, and I think you can look at the preamble to the statute, and it's talking about legitimate news gathering activities. It's not suggesting we want to extend a privilege to news organizations that break the law. So I think that's the statutory hook here, as you're looking at what was the...
What language are you focusing on in point 022?
The purpose of section 595.021 and 025 is to ensure and perpetuate consistent with the public interest.
At point 021 or point 022?
I'm putting it at point 022.
Okay.
I'm referring to that as the preamble. It's kind of the statement of policy here.
Right, okay, the purposes of section,
yeah.
So the last sentence.
The last sentence, consistent with the public interest. And so the legislature had in mind something that the public would have an interest in, which is the ability for news organizations to go out and do their job, not the interest of, we're going to need to protect news agencies from committing torts.
So can I ask a...
But does this protect news agencies from committing torts when you can still...
No, from news gathering activities that are tortious is what I meant.
But this is different, though. This is discovery. This is not bringing a lawsuit, correct?
Correct.
So, okay. I just want to make sure I'm understanding your argument. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So
thank you.
So just another hypothetical. During the protests over the killing of George Floyd, there was a curfew imposed, and there were news organizations who stayed out after curfew to cover that. So are you saying that 595.023, that privilege would not apply to anything that the news organizations covered after, I can't remember what time the curfew was, but after the magic hour?
I wouldn't imagine that any court would conclude that under those sort of circumstances.
That it would not apply.
Right. Okay. I don't think any court would conclude that.
And they wouldn't be trespassing. They're out on public streets, yeah. Public sidewalks,
yeah,
but
right.
They're past. Okay. So there's no distinction in your mind. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much to both counsel. The case was well briefed and well argued. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.